That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 109 of That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast, posting on the 14th of October, 2022. Hi, I'm Conal O'Moran. Today, as we record, it's National Women's Enterprise Day, organised by our pals at the local enterprise offices, so a great excuse to have some great women entrepreneurs join us. And before I introduce you to them, let me make my usual request to share this podcast. Give the gift of inspiration by sharing the stories from our great guests. So don't just like us, share us. Also, I was so busy with the cast of thousands on the Intertrade Ireland story on the show last week, that's episode 108, that I forgot to tell you that our own business is growing. One podcast is a horse, but we now have a second podcast. That means we have a stable. My friends Peter Leonard and Mark Tottenham, the award-winning team behind Law on Trial, have launched their brand new podcast called The Fifth Court, essential listening for anyone in and around the law. Episode 1 had Judge Jerry Hogan on, and aptly this week their VIP guest is Karen Harty, formerly a bigwig in McCann's Fitzgeralds, but who has very recently joined the vast legal firm that is Denton's. They have 12,000 lawyers employed worldwide. Check out The Fifth Court. All our great tips and insights you hear on That Great Business Show are brought to you, as always, thanks to DeFacto Shaving Oil, made in Mayo, sold worldwide. Now, when it comes to a gift from a child to a parent, it has to be affordable. What better for a dad, granddad, uncle, brother, or anyone really, than to have a great value bottle of DeFacto Shaving Oil? Pop on to defactoshave.com, buy it, and Karina will make sure it's in your letterbox. It's designed to fit just a day or two later. It's ideal for gifting, if you get my drift.
DeFacto Shaving Oil, smooth as.
And so to episode 109. Shortly, we'll have two women with very different businesses talking about their enterprise journeys. But to start with, I think it's fair to say that everybody listening knows the Red Cow Moran's Hotel. Tracy Moran is one of the Moran family. Her job is not just keeping the 300-bedroom Red Cow landmark front and centre of our minds, but she also has a second hotel she's promoting. That's the Wren Urban Nest Hotel in the very, very, very centre of Dublin. And still, that's not enough for her. She also has got another business aimed at teenagers and their mental health. Tracy Moran, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you, and what a pleasure to be here. But you make it sound like I'm doing this all on my ownsome, and alas, it is not that. It is not that way, and we have
but
a huge team
busy
around
us. You keep busy.
I very busy person, as they say. Ask a busy person, and she'll get it done.
I love the way that you stuck in that she'll get it done.
She'll get it done. Yeah, I do advocate the female involvement and our ability to multitask, as they say, and get things going. But no, we have an amazing team. I have an amazing family around me as well. So the Red Cow is very much a family business. I run it with my sister Karen, my brother Tommy, and my brother Michael, and a whole host of amazing people. We are actually the appointed operators for Wren Urban Nest. We aren't actually the owners. So we were appointed the operators when it opened just over a year ago. So we're celebrating the first anniversary actually this month.
It's a nice little hotel. Now, little, it's like it's fine, but it's little for another reason. Explain.
It's small but smart. So it has been put together with a very considered set of criteria. It is Ireland's first net zero carbon hotel. It is probably the most sustainable hotel and hotel building in the country. And it's got bags of personality given its size. So it sits on the former Andrews Lane Theatre. It literally takes the full circumference of the original building. It's 137 bedrooms, or nests as we like to call them. So we have snug and cozy nests. And they are small but cleverly put together with a lot of attention to detail and cleverly decided in terms of the fit out and the facilities that have been put put in them.
It looks gorgeous. It's well worth going onto the website because there is, as you say, it's clever design. And yeah. It is Centre City and it's meant to be, I presume, affordable.
It is affordable. I think the craziness that is in Ireland at the moment, to be fair, has thrown rates a little bit out the window. But I suppose ultimately what we always want as business owners and as hotel operators is that value is perceived and that you don't feel like you're compromising on your stay for the price that you've paid, that you have had a stay that's different, that's luxurious, by being, you know, I suppose sustainable and eco-friendly and all of that good stuff. You're not compromising on anything from a luxury point of view. So it's all about perceived value and, you know, what that stay means to you.
And one of the many reasons that you are here, because naturally we wanted to find out all about the family behind Moran's Hotel, is that Nicola Kearns of Nicky's Tea, or Nick's Tea, I think she calls it, mentioned that we should really have you on. There is symbiosis, that's a nice word, between the two, because you stock her tea and she promotes you. That's the way good business works.
Well, it is. It is. And that's how sustainable business culture works. And, you know, we'll get into the whole topic of what sustainability means to me there in a second. But Nick is an amazing lady and she's one of a number of ladies who I would say have really inspired my education piece when it comes to sustainability. So aside from Nick supplying the hotel, I got to know Nick, or Nicky, I should say, when we did an event for International Women's Day last March. So we wanted to do something that would encourage people, women in the locality, to come and see the property. Our focus was on women in business who promote, who their passion is the planet, and they promote themselves as being passionate about the environment. And Nicky was one of them. And we had a number of other ladies, Roxanne Parker, Sharon Farron from Kokoro Zenware, Pat from Reusey, Jo Linehan, the Futurist. We had some amazing, amazing ladies. And they really inspired me because they shared their stories, their business stories, and they taught me so much more about sustainability. You know, I suppose the proof is in the pudding. I sat down beside my son the other day and I said, you know, what does sustainability mean to you? And I asked the office the same question today. And there's a bit like myself, I would say, pre-Ren, I would have said it's about not using too much plastics. It's about, you know, saving the planet and your footprint. But, you know, I think that's quite daunting because there's a feeling that how can I save the planet and how can I do all of these things? So it becomes this far-reaching proposition. But what these ladies, Nicky included, have really shown me and taught me that sustainability is more, it's a mindset, you know, it's a set of values. It's a way of doing business. It's a way of conducting your life. It's a considered approach to the decisions that you make, the choices that you make, how you choose to do business. So I suppose in having these collaborations, in meeting people like Nicky, like Pat, like Joe, like all of the ladies I just mentioned, you know, there's a collaborative approach to making an impact. You know, Ireland can help each other, you know, Ireland and Irish businesses can help by having that kind of a culture where there is very much a support local, where there's, you know, preference and priority given to supporting your local suppliers. Ireland's a very small country, but it has huge talent, huge ability, amazing products. And, you know, the internet, we can love it and hate it all in one go. But what it has done is it's helped us to, you know, to present and to platform products and businesses that we might otherwise have not known about. Small businesses like Nick's Tea, where once we're aware of them, if we can and when we can, we'll incorporate them into our businesses.
Oh boy, that means that you're going to get a whole heap of businesses knocking on your door now.
Great.
To see whether they can come to you.
Great. But what I would say is that, and I'm, I suppose personally and also from a business point of view, it is very much about the business, the little steps. And when you consider a decision, some things you can do and some things you can't. And ultimately, you know, you'll look at things from all sorts of angles and some things make sense at the time and some things don't. So I'd love to hear from them because, you know, it sets a seed. And where I can't use something maybe in direct business, there's other aspects of my life, business and interests where maybe there's other collaborations to be met.
Do you use the whole sustainability thinking around Moran's Hotel as well as the Wren, or is it, do you keep them separate?
Absolutely. And do you know, labels are great because they help us to box something, but they can also be contraintuitive or contraindicative because they don't help you to really understand what the ethos or the essence is. There's an awful lot of what we've been doing as business people in the Red Cow Moor and Hotel for years that now comes under the sustainable or sustainability heading.
Such as?
Such as, I would say, you know, a value culture, you know, recognising the value and like that, considered choices when it comes to selecting suppliers, remaining supportive of local produce and local people in terms of whether it's fit outs or interiors or products. Sometimes that's not possible. But as I say, when you're considering a project or a piece of work or how you operate, priority as part of our values would come into that practice.
But also, you're in business, so price comes into it as well.
It does.
And
it
therefore,
does.
There's a trade-off. And you say, yeah, I'd love to have the local supplier, but Johnny down somewhere else has it at a quarter of the price.
But there's a balance. So it's never going to be just one part of it. It's quality, service and price. So, you know, price is one thing, and sometimes people do fall at that hurdle because you'll pick price over the other elements. But it is about service and it is about the quality of that product. And ultimately, that will win out. But we'll always couple those three and bring it in under the kind of the preference for local and for Irish.
And as I did explain to you, and with good reason, that there is no structure to these chats. I never give any advance warning. No, I'm just interested as maybe some ideas of things that you have done in any of your businesses, three at the moment, but maybe there are others, that people just, you say, why don't people do X or why don't they do more of Y? Anything like that, that you just say, God, I'm so simple. Why don't they just do that?
You know, it's everything, though. It's a culture in terms of even locally supporting your community in terms of the charities that you support, the, you know, recognising the value of kind of local, whether it's sports, schools, you know, activities like that. And it's not just from a business, from a commercial. It can be from, you know, from a heartfelt wanting to get you, because when you have a business and your participants, your staff all work for you, It's a family, you know, and their family live in the community. So by helping them, you're helping others and so on and so forth. So I would say certainly in terms of our support of not just those that operate directly within the business, but also giving back. And we've done that over the years, publicly, privately, in all different shapes and forms. It's about, you know, supporting community in whatever that that guise comes under.
Now I'm going to go into some of the standard questions that you're always asked, I'm sure, about the tourism industry in Ireland. Too expensive, can't get staff, inflation going through the roof, all of the above. Are we, pricing ourselves out of the tourism market rather rapidly?
You know what? It's a scary situation at the moment. You know, I understand how and why that's happening because there's less accommodation available within the market because of the government's usage of hotels to look after our refugees. So, you know, it is making it difficult because the less availability of hotels, the higher the price is going to be. And, you know, as a hotelier, I am obviously concerned about that because I do see it's not just about now, it's the sustainability of it and it's the future-proofing of our events, conferences, conventions that come in sort of three-year cycles. And I would be concerned that in the next year or two that there would be some of those bodies will look at Ireland and will look at other European countries and say, you know what, we can't go there because of the cost of doing it. So yeah, I would have, as a hotelier, I would have concerns. There is an element though of, you know, looking at the negatives and talking ourselves into all, you know, there's obviously the practical, there's inflation, there's all of this real stuff happening. But at the same time, we're talking ourselves into a recession. And there's an element of that that Ireland has to be a little bit more cautious of. And the amount of people that have said that to me of late is incredible, that, you know, we need to look at all of the positives, look at where we're at in terms of our economy, look at all the benefits of Ireland as a place to do business and focus on driving that and focus on not falling into recession and see how that pans out for us.
If Tracy Moran had a magic wand, what would she wand, first of all, or what couple of things might you wave your magic wand at to fix?
Oh, gosh. You see, there's the Tracy Moran in business and there's the Tracy Moran personal.
I'm thinking more business. We are a business podcast.
Yeah,
we'll do the other
stuff
later. For example, staff, it must be just impossible. I see it on every window of every service business. Wanted people, anything. If you can walk, come in.
It's so frustrating. You know, you hear some of the announcements in terms of unemployment, and unemployment is down, but we can't get the staff, and we can't get chefs, we can't get service staff. And it's in every walk of life. The amount of businesses I've seen, small independents, closed shops with limited hours, you know, closing for lunch where they never did before.
So what do you do? That's not a business. If you're meant to be serving food and you can't serve food, what do you do?
I mean, I'd love to see a little bit more joined up thinking in terms of even, you know, we have all of these amazing people coming into the country that we're looking to look after. We need to facilitate them better in terms of allowing them to be able to work. You know, you look at Killarney, for example. You had 130 people that had started in the community, had started working, had started in employment, being pulled out and moved to another county.
Fortunately, they've been reversed again.
It has been reversed,
utterly,
which I think is
amazing.
I utterly
agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's...
So where we have solutions, let's maximise on it. You know, and at the end of the day, like I remember years and years ago, way back when there was a, I'm trying to think even when it was, it's a long time ago. And I remember there was an initiative where hotels did go across to parts of Asia and to Malaysia. And there was a drive on labour to bring people over. And at the time we employed quite a lot and we still have some of those amazing people working with us. And I don't think that should be
done now.
Well, I don't know, but I don't think it should be necessary. Not if, you know, we have a huge number of people still in the country, either not working or maybe there's reasons that they are not being put in a position that they can work. So whether it's the Ukrainians that don't have childcare for the kids or whether they haven't got the paperwork through, who knows? I think all of that could be looked at and maybe that's a solution in some small part. But it's the cost of living. It's the accommodation. You know, that's a whole big part. The Brazilian student workforce used to come over and they used to be a lot of our service staff. There used to be a lot of our childminders as well. I struggled to get childminding during the summer. But they can't get accommodation. So, you know, it filters back, don't come, there's no accommodation. So it's all of that. It's accommodation and it's making sure that all the dots are being, or all the T's are being crossed and the I's dotted to make sure that they can actually process and that they can work.
Working in a family business, the joys, the joys. Do you ever have really good rows?
Loads of them.
We love it, warts and all. Tell us about some great fights you've had. Let me just divert for a second. There is a family, they were very, very well-known property developers years and years ago. And I learned about this, true story, is at board meetings, they actually used to get down on the floor and beat the lard out of each other. True story.
Yes.
No, you haven't done that yet, no?
No, we haven't. Well, I'd like to say never, and that won't transpire. You know, I suppose as a family, we're very conscious of it never becoming an issue. And, you know, we're very transparent with each other. We do discuss but I think the big difference between us is that we work hard together, but we also play hard together. So we're a very close family. We live very close to each other. We actually socialise together, which might sound a little bit bizarre given our proximity in terms of work. But we're very different personalities. We all have different skill sets. We don't live in each other's pockets in the business. So we work in our own channels as such. But we come together and I think it's the diversity of our thoughts, of the way we think and the way we, you know, yes, we debate. Yes, we disagree. But if we were all the same, then you wouldn't come up with some of the wacky ideas or be able to pivot or maintain, I suppose, our business acumen as we have done.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy to use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
Viscosity. When you shave, you want the highest viscosity because it helps the blade run smoother. DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, has incredible viscosity. That's why DeFacto leaves your face, underarms or legs nick-free. Higher viscosity makes blades last longer. DeFacto is the best for your skin and your pocket. DeFactoShave.com.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
Where did all the business acumen that you mentioned come from? Your dad?
I would say my amazing dad, yeah. So,
do you want to talk about him? Because he had a serious fall a few years ago and he hasn't been well.
Yeah, so in 2016, my dad was attending a wedding in Spain. A really good friend of his, Charlie Chalk's daughter, was getting married. And dad, you know, we'd had a couple of years before where dad had been, you know, exceptionally busy with the changing dynamic of our business group. So he had gone to this wedding, really looking forward to it, excited about the couple of days break, I suppose. And on his way home after one of the day's events, dad took a fall and it transpired he'd actually had a stroke. So he had a significant bleed to the brain, brain injury caused by the fall on top of that, rushed into emergency care in Spain, was 6 weeks in a coma.
That's a long time.
It was a long time. And, you know, truth be told, he was never meant to leave Spain alive. They really didn't think he would actually survive. The odds were seriously stacked against him. But, you know, he's a tough vicar. he's a Limerick man. He's stubborn. And at no stage has he ever given up. And, you know, he did the 6 weeks in a coma and then he was airlifted back to Dublin. And I honestly can remember the day like it was yesterday. He was airlifted back in. My brother Stephen and I and my brother-in-law Thor were there to meet his neurologist or the appointed neurologist for him coming into St. James Hospital, Colin Doherty. And Colin has heard me tell this story so many times. So Colin, in his professionalism, gave us the bleak outlook. You know, at that stage, dad had started to come around. Remarkably, he was actually starting to come out of the coma when he hit home soil. But Colin showed us where the bleeds had happened, the damage to the brain, where they were. And he painted a very bleak outlook. And he spoke about whether or not we wanted to resuscitate. And, you know, it was just like we'd just been, it was a whirlwind. It was like somebody had just given us a slap. Stephen and I stood there holding hands, the tears just pouring down our faces. And I remember my brother-in-law, Thor, who's so positive. He's an incredible ambassador for positivity. And he said, but he's made it this far and he wasn't meant to survive Spain. And it was and I remember responding to him saying, geez, Thor, I said, I don't hear anything positive coming out of Colin's mouth, you know, because, positivity wasn't the subject of the moment. But lo and behold, he actually he continued to progress. He continued to improve. Like, you know, we got a further diagnosis at one stage. They said he wouldn't walk, he wouldn't talk, he wouldn't eat. He defied all of that. So while he is mobility impaired, he can walk with the support of an aide. He can talk. He can socialise. He has been all the Limerick Games. He's an absolute ambassador for life. And he'll defy anyone who tells him he's not going to get fully better.
And he is also, I think you told me, involved in the business. He comes in and gives us tuppence worth as well.
He comes in and he will, yeah, he'll throw his pounds worth in. He'll challenge, he'll question, still sits at our board meetings. He's an incredibly astute mind, you know, and he'll just throw out the humdingers every so often. It'll either redirect or it'll make you question, you know, decisions that we're focusing on.
Board brings me neatly along to the future because you always have to wonder, are you ever happy with one, then two, with a third hotel or maybe a fourth hotel, or would that be on the horizon, or what's your thinking on that?
So I'm not sure if you're aware, but we went from one hotel to four more in hotels and then up to 10 hotels when we bought the six Bewleys. And then we came back down to one hotel. And
I remember the story very well.
So I suppose as a family, we've proven that we're not a family to sit still. We're always looking for opportunities. We're always on the
other
lookout.
That's a yes.
That's an absolutely yes. But again, it's like the sustainability question. It's a considered approach. We'll look at everything and it has to be the right fit in all shapes and forms.
What would the perfect fit be for you?
Oh, gosh, there's the absolute
They're so different. Like a Red Cow is so different to the Wren. In my head, anyway.
It is. I mean, we'd love a city centre hotel, you know. But
what's available?
Well, that's for another discussion.
Talking to people?
We're always looking. We're always looking. You know, there's an element of always wanting to build and build exactly what you want, to create your own concept.
Is that better? Because, of course, when you take over an existing, whether it's a 100-year-old building.
We've done both. Yeah, we've done both. So we have done... We've done the build from scratch, the Red Cow Hotel. We've done Chiswick, the Crown Mooring that we had in London. And then we've done where you take over. And I suppose what we have learned, even in when we had Silver Springs back in the day, renaming doesn't work because, you know, it's forever known as that particular property. And it is harder to put your stamp on it. Not impossible, but it is harder. So, you know, in an ideal world, if you said to me, you know, you had X amount and you could go out and you could spend on the perfect, it would be to build our own in the city centre. But, you know, who knows? We'll keep looking.
There are many people who don't want any more hotels built in the city centre. Obviously, you're not one of them.
I'm not one of them. But again, I suppose, and I am, you know, I do take that question quite seriously, because that was one of the factors when ALT, you know, was being converted. Andrews Lane Theatre was being converted into a hotel.
Is that what you call it? ALT?
ALT was...
ALT built is the bar by one of my former stockbroking partners, a fellow called Huey O'Donnell. I know Andrews Lane extremely well. Poor old Huey is no longer with us, but
But I think, again, I suppose it's how you then do business thereafter. So I do believe that Renurban Nest is very... it's a conscious... business, both eco-friendly wise and also culturally and in terms of its community. So it is about working with a community. You can't land a big hotel in the middle of somewhere and not work with the residents and the community around you, make it a property that actually gives back as well as contributes. And I think that Renurban Nest does that.
We are going to run out of time, so we better get on to what you would love to talk about a bit more, the other business,
which
is the kids' business. It's a lovely idea.
You know, I'm very proud of it. It was a concept I came up with this time last year. And in 6 months, I made the concept a reality, which was quite daunting. It's called Inside Out Camps. I have a personal passion and interest in teen confidence and teen mental health. So looking at the confidence bit first, I really do believe, and I'm an ambassador for self-esteem, and I believe that if our kids, if our teens have more confidence in their own ability, in their own physical, mental well-being, in their own value, in what they have to offer and give back, I believe that will help to reduce the mental health issues that they will have going forward from there. So it's a proactive approach to mental health. We're not bringing it. So I suppose the idea behind it is we run a residential summer camp. We bring teens, or I should say from 12 to 15. So the idea is that kids from finishing sixth class before they head into big school, and then first and second years. Because talking to the likes of Joan Freeman and talking to ambassadors for teen mental health and psychologists and teachers, it's been recognised that it's a really pivotal time in a teen's development, that period between 12 and 15, where the hormones are raging, where there's a lot of life questions coming in, where they're really starting to challenge who and what they are, where they're going, their value, what they're about, and, you know, where they're going to go. So I suppose, and you know, my own upbringing, I would say the same. We moved from Limerick to Dublin, and there was a lot of changes, and that affected my own mental health at the time, which is something I'll come back to there in a second. So I came up with this idea of a summer camp where the teens get to get away from their normal routine. So it's taking them out of their normal life, their normal circle. It's detox. It's digital detox, which is a whole different conversation and topic. It's the idea. It's very much nature focused, but it's fun activity and learning through nature. And there's lessons and there's role models and there's a positive spin on really getting to know who and what you are. So it's discovering skills, discovering things that you didn't know about yourself, what you can do, what you are about, what value you have to give. And all done in a very fun, non-academic way. I'm very much about not sitting in a classroom. You could be out, you know, in the forestry, doing a hike, foraging. You could be playing a game of basketball. It's a complete mishmash. It's physical, it's mental. Because I do think that not everybody is academic, not everybody's physical, but we can all benefit from giving both our medical, our mental and our physical well-being a little bit of a challenge every so often, and giving it a bit of a run for its money.
And you're going to come back to your own personal interest in this area?
Yeah, so as I said, we moved from Limerick to Dublin in 1988. So I was, during that pivotal time, I was 13 going on 14, changed schools halfway through a year, and I developed depression from the age of 14, 15. And it's something I've battled all my life. I battle it now very proactively. I really do see the value and benefit in exercise, in minding your inner state. You know, ultimately, if your mind and your inner state are not functioning, are not performing, then nothing else will work. And, you know, there's an element of that that I want to teach my own kids and also the kids that come to the camp. You know, there's a frustration in, you know, I'm a very young woman. I'm not going to share on the airwaves what age I am, but I'm a mother of three. And there's a lot I would have liked to have known about myself younger. There's a lot I would have liked to have recognised from a value, from a self-esteem point of view, younger. So really what Inside Out Camps is about kids learning about themselves earlier so they're better placed to deal with life's challenges.
And you use the plural there, camps. But there's only one camp at the moment. Are you planning world domination?
Sorry, it's by camps I mean that it'll run over a series of weeks.
Would you do more of them elsewhere? Because that one is Dublin-based.
Well, this is only going to be the second year. I would absolutely love to grow it, but it's like the little steps that we do in Wren. We need to make sure that it's sustainable. I want to make it commercially viable so that it can actually wash its own face, continue to grow. And then from there out, then we'll make decisions in terms of how we grow it and how we use it to benefit all communities and all schools and all levels.
And you know what is the final question that we ask you, because I have warned you, but I'm going to ask you a second question. And I've already asked you, where did the name The Red Cow come from?
I have deliberated, debated and researched this at length. I suppose there was a Red Cow pub that goes back to the 1800s. And a lot of the areas, because we have got the topography maps, I don't know what they're exactly called.
That's the correct word.
It is. So we have those, we've got these big blow-up maps in the Link Lounge in the Red Cow, and they do show all of these different areas from Shoulder of Mutton, as you quite rightly said earlier, to Bluebell, to Green Hills. And we can only at this stage surmise that it's down to either geographical or agricultural practices in the area that might have dictated. Maybe there was loads of cows in the area, but
they would have to be red, though.
They would have to be red. Now, funnily enough, when we were actually doing the extension and we were doing the dig, we came across some bones when we were doing the dig, and they happened to be pigs. So that threw my whole theory and ethos about cows into.
So it could be the red pig.
Could be the red pig. So we don't have the answer, but we're always seeking it. And if anyone listening can give us more information, because I've put it out on a number of platforms and forums, and I would love to know the ultimate answer.
So the final question to Tracy Moran is, who would she hire in a heartbeat?
Now, I've thought about this at length, and I'm not going to give you a direct answer. I'm going to give you a slightly light, long-winded version, but
That's
it's my
okay.
version. So if I was to talk about it from my own personal, it's hypothetical. She no longer lives, unfortunately. Maya Angelou is a personal inspiration because she, I suppose, she epitomises everything that I believe in. I'm passionate about people, and I'm passionate about people and kids and teens recognising their own individuality and their own amazingness. And that's what Maya Angelou was all about. So if you had Maya in your business, you could not have a better advocate for individuality and amazingness.
And teach me, who was Maya Angelou, or where was she? Or
she was a speaker, an actress, an advocate for civil rights. She passed away in 2014 at age 86.
This is in the US, isn't it?
It was in the US, yeah. I'm sure you've heard quotes like, you may not remember what somebody said to you or did to you, but you'll always remember how they made you feel. And that is something I've always stood by. So she has some amazing quotes that really, I suppose, really shape, you know, what you believe in from a value perspective. So the other one is a little left of field, and this is with Inside Out in mind. And I came up with the idea of Lady Gaga, right? So it is a bit random. But Lady Gaga, amazing performer in her own right, individualist, not afraid to stand out, very strong work ethic, was actually a camp counsellor back in the day as a kid. So if I was to hire her in the morning for Inside Out, not only would she understand personally the whole camp ethos that I'm trying to get across, but she would be an icon and an ambassador for, you know, working hard for what you're passionate about. And, you know, I suppose proving that the more you put in, the more you'll get out, and that you can make it if you if you're passionate. And also be an individual, which was something I was going to come to you about very briefly, and that was my photograph, John Murray. John Murray is a photographer based in the city.
Hang on a second. Now, this is a photograph that you sent me of you.
Yes.
Because I asked for it for promotion.
Because you asked for it. But John Murray is one of my collaborators on Inside Out. And John is an amazing advocate for you and you as an individual, as an individual brand. So he really advocates and endorses the importance of staying true to your individuality, which is what Maya was all about, which is what Lady Gaga was all about. And that's a theme that runs all the way through the camp. So John does a workshop in the camp where he's getting, and they're telling me to stop talking here now, but he does a part in the workshop.
No, I'm not telling you because I love this.
Where he's very much, I mean, we look at our teens and they're clones. They dress the same. They look the same. They want to speak
the same.
But
they think they're different.
And they think they're different. So he's trying to prove that when you take a photograph of yourself, it's really highlighting that you are the most unique brand that exists. You are individual.
I like that.
Which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah, well, so it makes an awful lot of sense to me because there is only one of you.
You're your best brand.
Yeah.
You know, but it's recognizing that. And I think, you know, all of us could do with recognizing it a little bit more.
That is excellent. Lovely. Do come in to us again when you are have taken over some other hotels. Oh, the other one that I better get out of you is shout out now. I think 8th of March is coming up again, isn't it?
Yes.
You've got the most lovely cow with the lipstick on your website promoting your Women's Day. Am I right? The International Women's Day? Is that on again this coming
March? We ran it in Wren Urban Nest. So we are looking at a series of different events. One of them will be for International Women's Day, hopefully working again with Roxanne Parker, with Sharon Farron and all the ladies. The spin this time will be on sustainable styling. So again, a focus on trying to, you know, reuse, repurpose rather than using fast fashion. So again, there's lessons in that for the ladies and possibly the men.
Lovely photograph of a cow looking into the camera with lipstick. I loved it. Tracy Moran, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thinking of travel? If so, make sure to make Defacto, the world's best shaving oil, your choice of travel companion. A 25-milliliter bottle of Defacto means no hassle at airports, no bulky cans to carry, and the guarantee of the world's best shave. DefactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRedCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with five-star customer support. BigRedCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
That Great Business Show.
Variety is the spice of business, as that old phrase goes. With that in mind, we bring you two completely different businesses. One that makes throat lozenge type things for kids. The other is a twist on property development. So, how different is that? Sinead Crowther is founder of Tonstix, a pharmaceutical technician. Sinead saw a gap in the market with her throat lozenge on a stick idea. And they are now stocked in almost 800 pharmacies nationwide and sucked by thousands more. Joining her in studio is Lisa Gagan, founder of Sonalife, a company that creates something called Community Experiences in Property Development. Lisa's company creates happy tenants. Happy tenants stay longer and are happier. So a win for landlord and tenant. Both of these women have been helped by their local enterprise offices, or LEO, and the LEOs are Team GBS approved. So Lisa, August, Sinead, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Today is National Women's Enterprise Day, and both of you have come from two different LEO events. Encourage, please, both of you, women, to get involved in industry and business and entrepreneurship, and also to get involved in their LEOs. We'll start with you, Sinead, because you look like you're mad keen to start talking.
I get that a lot.
When did you, or how did you get involved in the business? Because you were, as I said, a pharmaceutical technician, and then you decided to go off and make your tonsils.
I did.
That's a bit of a jump.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a leap, a 5-year leap. It wasn't an overnight thing.
Is that how long it took from A to Z? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was a pharmaceutical technician, started at age of 15 in transition year. That's how I got into pharmacy. And I just really loved that, building relationships across the counter and helping. And even back then in the mid-90s, a long time ago.
No, what we say nowadays is a while ago.
A while ago. Yeah. There was nothing specifically for children that was like the equivalent of like a hall soother. Just, you know, something that soothes the throat. And I didn't pay too much attention to it. So fast forward 25 or a few years. And there was still nothing on the shelf. And I had worked in various pharmacies. And at this stage, I found myself separated with 4 children who had suffered tonsillitis and every kind of sore throat you can imagine. And I used to joke with my colleagues in pharmacy and say, you know what, I have a great idea. This is going to be my dragon's den. One day I'm going to do this. And I suppose the turning point came. This is a little bit, you know, dramatic. My son had an accident while I was at work. He was only 2 and he sustained horrific burns.
Oh, dear.
And I didn't know that that was my last day in the pharmacy. And while we were in hospital for nearly a month. He developed sepsis and he nearly didn't survive that. And it was coming up to Christmas. It was a very stressful time. And my other 3 children were at home. And I was thinking, you know, please hang on with us and I will make some sort of change in our lives and we will never be in this position again. And he got out of hospital on Christmas Eve and Santa came and it was the best thing ever. And I finished work. I didn't go back. I was terrified to leave them in case anything happened to any of them. Tough time. Like, you know, mentally it was a big toll, big burden, felt the guilt. And New Year's Day 2017, I woke up and I had the laptop out wondering how I was going to pay the bills because I'd left the job.
And is that the same Christmas time that your son came back?
So he was 2016, Christmas 2016. He had
the accident. So this is
later. January 2017,
oh, sorry,
day
this,
one.
So this is only a couple of 2 weeks afterwards. Yeah.
So, and I Googled. He had his accident at the end of November.
sorry. The details, sorry.
It's very technical.
Sorry, I'm ruining a great story. Sorry.
Anyway, so I was wondering how I was going to pay the mortgage because I was on my own already and no job now. And I Googled, so worrying about the bills. And then I was like, do you know what? In the hospital, it was a struggle for doctors and nurses to administer medications. They're horrible. You have to pin the child down. Same with the throat thing. There was nothing specific. Glycerin syrups don't stay in contact with the throat long enough. And I thought, you know, this is a really good idea. My idea of essentially a jelly lozenge on it, delivered in a lollipop form for children. And I Googled that morning, like 5 o'clock in the morning, I wasn't sleeping. How do you make a product from scratch? And it brought me to a form. And the form was Enterprise Ireland. And I was like, well, I don't know what this is. But it said, do you have an idea or a concept you'd like to explore? And I was like, I do, yeah. Filled in the form and hit send and totally forgot about it. And then about a week later, when everyone came back after Christmas and the New Year, I got a call from Enterprise Ireland, New Frontiers Programme in Dundalk, to say, we're really interested in this. This is a really good idea. Do you want to talk to us? And I was like, really? Because I felt, I suppose, such a failure because my marriage broke down, I was struggling with bills, and my son had an accident. And I was like, someone said I'm doing something right or this, you know. And
that,
so that was the turning point. So I'll speed up, long story short, got on New Frontiers. The concept did have legs. They taught me everything about starting a business and signposting everything. And then the program ended. And I was like, what the hell do I do now? Went to the Leo for a primer grant.
Okay.
So I had it drawn on a piece of paper. I kept the piece of paper. Scribbly drawn, and I had paid someone for a bit of brand and a bit of, you know, brand identity. And I went into the Leo with my idea and I said, I've been talking to all these pharmacy buyers. This is my network. I know the problem. They said, if Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come, they'll buy it. So I was like, and so that's all. Now I have no money. I have 4 children, currently no job. Would you give me a primer grant? And they put it to the, you know, the board and they gave it to me. So then I had a bit more self-belief. And then I went to the bank, same thing. You don't get a loan when you're a mortgage and a loan parent. And I said, now, if you gave me this 20 grand loan to build a prototype, the primer grant are going to refund that because you have to spend your primer grant and then the Leo refund it. And because that I had that endorsement from the Leo, the bank said, yeah, built the prototype. And then the following year, I won Competitive Star Fund with Enterprise Ireland, 50K investment.
Happy days.
And in between
just
all of that.
When you won that 50K,
yeah.
Was that life-turning, life-changing? Or what was the big, big, big one that changed everything for you?
I suppose the initial primer grant, which is why it's so pivotal, because I knew I had to build a prototype. I needed something in my hand tangible, because jelly on a stick doesn't sound very impressive, does it? You know, I was in these programs, and like yourself, they're like, they have this technology and it's app and it's multi-platform. I've no business background, didn't know the jargon. I always felt a bit lost. And I'm like, yeah, my name's Sinead, I'm going to put jelly on a stick. I felt like an idiot, you know? And the Primer Grant kind of gave me some validation. I was like, well, there's these people in business believe I can do this, or this is, you know, valid. Maybe it is. And then that gave me the confidence to go to the bank. That's what ultimately got me building the prototype, which took 2 years.
Did it really?
Very 2 complicated. Years? Wow. Yeah, because the formulation is very there's no additives, no E numbers, no nasties. Literally, it's just honey mixed with jelly. And to get that to the consistency where it melts in the mouth was technically very difficult. And then you have to put that on a person-shaped stick. There's no machinery that can facilitate a person-shaped stick. Lollipop sticks are straight. So it was very complex. But then when I won competitive star, so the Primer Grant led me to that. I got the prototype, won competitive star fund. And then I got a co-founder in, because when I had established the prototype and won CSF, I said, right, I can't do this on my own. It's too big. And I have 4 kids. And I had met my co-founder on the New Frontiers program. She had another business. And I really admired her work ethic. She was like just a workhorse. And she was running a business, which I never did. And I was like, well, she's skills that I don't have. And so like, how could she refuse this offer? I said, look, I have no money. Competitive Star Fund. I already had borrowed some for the prototype in addition to the Primer Grant. I've only a couple of grand left. Can't pay a salary. Don't know if this is going to work. Don't know how long it's going to take. Are you in? Unbelievably, she said, I am, yeah. Because she really believed that there was a place for this. And so then we continued. She joined in November 2019.
Okay, we know what happened next.
So we were in lockdown, and then we had to design a way to scale this production up. No manufacturer in the world would touch it, because number one, there's no jelly lollipops anywhere. And number two, there's no jelly lollipops on a stick-shaped person. So because of the innovation is great, but it's a double-edged sword, because on one hand, everyone loves it because it's new. And on the other hand, no one knows what to do with you. So we had to innovate and merge processes to manufacture this, which we did over our kitchen tables via Zoom with engineers. And then we had no money.
Again.
Denise has 4 children. I have 4 children. These 2 men threw a puppy into the mix in lockdown as well, to add to the chaos. So then we had to convince investors. We have a route to market. We have 10 pharmacy chains. We know how to make it. We've sourced the equipment. Could you give us €500,000?
You didn't.
We did.
€500,000?
€500,000.
That, as I often say, is a chunk of change.
Chunk of change. And surprisingly, due to the unique nature, and they all were identified through their due diligence, there isn't anything like this serving this particular need specifically for children. They said yes. And not only that, we oversubscribed the round and we've ended up raising €1.2 million. We built our manufacturing facility in Dundalk and we have 7 employees. So there's 9 of us in total.
That is a terrific story.
Mic drop.
And well, we'll get on to the future in a second, because I better go over to Lisa and see what... Lisa, can you match that?
No, that's okay. Oh my God, that's absolutely incredible. I literally didn't want to interrupt the good story, but
it is an incredible story. Oh. I had never heard this story before.
Okay,
so that is fantastic, Lisa. Good. No pressure.
No pressure.
Son of Life is okay. Your business.
It is,
and you came up with what is. I certainly had never heard of a business like it, so that is a good thing. It's not unlike Ton Sticks.
It's very niche, and I'm the first person to do this in the property sector. So I suppose my background is in property. I'm a chartered property surveyor, and I've worked with different companies over the years. And I literally
love... What does a chartered property surveyor do?
It sounds quite fancy. But really, basically, it just proves that you're qualified to be able to sign off on different things.
Such as?
I used to work in valuations, so I used to value property investment funds and different one-off properties. So when you're chartered, you're actually able to like sign off on it. Whereas when you're not chartered, you can do all the work and then the person who's chartered signs off on it to make sure that everything is correct. It's just standards, basically.
So you had the bits of paper?
Had the paper. And I basically loved property until I just didn't love it anymore. And I knew I needed to make a change. And I was working for a company called Green REIT, Green Property at the time. And that was amazing. And after I finished on a project there, I was able to go off travelling. So I was very lucky to be able to go off travelling for 13 months and just get a bit of a break and a bit of perspective. And during that time, I really started to think about, well, what is it I actually want to do? And the big key thing that really came to me was making impact on people's lives. Like, how can I help people? How can I improve the way people are living? And I suppose I didn't really know what that was going to be. All I knew is that that's what I wanted to do. So I came home with no plan, got offered a good few jobs back in the property sector, and I just didn't feel like it was the right move for me. I wasn't excited about anything. And if I'm not excited about a job, I can't take it. Even though my parents were like, what are you doing? You're getting offered all these jobs. You haven't even handed in a CV anywhere. And you're sitting here going, no, it's not the right option. So then I actually wrote out what I wanted to do, and I really started to think about the way that we all live our lives. And I used to work in an office the majority of the week. I'd get in at 9 o'clock, maybe earlier, work right through. I'd go out at lunchtime, grab a sandwich, come back, work through my lunch. Like, we could finish work at whatever time, evening, nighttime, depending on deadlines, get home to my apartment building where I didn't know anybody, didn't know my neighbours. And it was like, repeat, this is 5 days a week. And I just thought, like, now, don't get me wrong, I had a nice network of friends, but I thought, what an unusual way to live, especially coming from like Ardrahan in the country where everybody knows everybody. Like, people are just knocking in on your house, in the door, very much community orientated. So I thought, is there not something that we could do in this space? And genuinely, I was chatting to one of my friends who was still working in that property company, and he was recommending all these different jobs for me. And I said, no, that's not what I want to do. And he's like, well, what do you want to do? And I kind of explained what I was thinking. And he said, well, you hardly want to take this job out in Central Park in Leopardstown. He's like, look, we have this idea around kind of trying to make a better experience for the people in this property development that we own. We had an event company trying to do it before. It didn't work. Look, maybe this is just an idea that's not going to get legs, or do you want to give it a go and see what happens? I was like, oh my God, I love this. Like, this is exactly what I really want to get into. And like, what I loved about the opportunity was it was like very open. So it's not like I basically had free rein to kind of create what I thought was the right way to go about it. I had no experience doing this, by the way. Like, my background's property. I'd never organized an event in my life. But I think when you're passionate enough about something, you will figure it out. And I loved every moment of it. And I brought in even my own values of, like, you know, I wanted to integrate charity events and how could we actually make impact for the local community as well. So we did a lot of work with Laura Lynn, and I started to figure out, well, what do companies have in common and how can we actually bring people who've got common interests together and all these different things. And I just loved how everything kind of grew legs. And we went from having like zero engagement to having over 4,500 people engaged, signed up to the newsletter. And all of our events went from being, you know, start small, because I was like, I like to say something is sold out. So we'd start small, and then we're up to like 300 people plus at our community gatherings on the bigger ones where we'd have the bigger budgets. And it literally took legs. So I really loved the concept. And then at the same time, I became a qualified Reiki practitioner and a kinesiologist, because in the spare time, I was thinking of setting up my own wellness company.
How did you have spare time?
Oh, I was just very passionate. Do you know when you come back from traveling, just like, oh my God, I want to try all these new things. So yeah, it was a lot. But at the same time, I was very passionate about these different things. So I came to a point where I was thinking of setting up a wellness company, but then I also really loved what I was doing. So I actually went off at Christmas time for a 3-week holiday to, like, again, kind of reconnect. And this is into January 2019. And I just kind of decided, do you know what? I think you're onto something here. I think if this really works here, it's probably needed in other property developments. And I just had the idea. I was very excited about it. And I came home and I told my boss what I was thinking, kind of half nervous, kind of half excited. And then he said, look, if this is something you want to do, we'll support you. And we, you know, I'd never hold anybody back from, you know, spreading their wings, is actually what he said. So then I thought, okay, how are we going to figure this out? But it all just started to roll naturally. Then I had the idea, kind of got permission to go off and build it myself, but still I'd never run a business before, didn't have a business plan. And next thing, a landlord came and contacted me and asked me, "What? Oh, you know what you did there in Central Park in Leopardstown? Is there any way you could do that for us in our property development?" I thought, oh my God.
How did that landlord know that you existed?
Because the program I had built had been going on for 2 years and it became very successful, and it became placemaking is kind of, back then, 2017 to 2019, placemaking was something that was starting to become more topical in property. I was the first person to develop a community engagement program in Ireland, and the only one that people could compare it to, could talk about, was the one that I built. So there was no one else to really ask, I guess. So they came to me going, see what you did in that property development. Can you do that for us and ours? And I thought, yeah. And then it was still kind of conversations that were rolling. And then literally, I think a couple of weeks later, I got a call from another landlord asking me to do the same thing. So before I knew it, I had three clients, even though I had no paperwork signed. But I had three clients before I had a business plan. And then I thought, right, OK, well, now I have to go for this. You know what I mean? And I ended up getting the first girl to join the company. Her name's Hazel. She's been my right-hand woman since day one. So I got her on board. She would have very good event experience, background, and very much a skill set that are complete. Like, I know my strengths and weaknesses, and I wanted somebody on the team to balance that. So between the two of us, we hit the ground running and started to develop the community programs in our first three property developments. So we set up the company in September 2019, and then we were 6 months operating when COVID hit. Yeah, so you literally couldn't make it up. You set up a community business to bring people together, and then we'd be like, "Oh, stay at home and like don't meet anybody in real life." I was like, "Are you actually winding me up?" But the only thing that actually, I was like, you can either laugh or cry about it. I guess I kind of did both for about 2 weeks, I'd say. But I was like, "Look, sure, you know, a pandemic was never going to be in the threat of my business plan, so." What can you do? But I guess, yeah, then, but in a very strange way, there's been pros and cons to everything and to the pandemic. I think taking a step back and looking at what my ambition was for my first year of business was probably very optimistic. I hadn't even successfully developed three new developments yet, and my plan was to be in 10 by next year. I learned so much by adapting the business online and how to deliver online community while adding value to, you know, the community members. And then also at the same time, I was able to put my business processes, operations, every systems, all of that in place that weren't in place when I first set up. So now obviously we're moving into, like, you know, January of this year, restrictions lifted, our business grew by 100%. We retained all of our clients during the pandemic. We also grew the business as well. We secured Walmart as a client for online stuff.
I was going to say Walmart in Ireland.
Yeah. Well, Walmart Global Tech were in Ireland, so we got their Dublin business. And then because it was virtual, they could share it, you know. Coming out of the pandemic, we've grown the business by 100%. We've also now built up our staff or the team, but that's because of Leo. So along the way, Leo were able to help me with different mentors. They got me the trading online voucher to set up my website. And I got into phase two of New Frontiers as well. So from doing the management side, like, I knew before I even set up the business that I needed to develop out a community platform, because I knew the functionality that was needed to complement the service. So I knew what needed to be built. I just didn't know how we were going to figure that out. And going through the New Frontiers program, they were able to help me kind of, you know, get that solution finally developed. And that now just launched in September of this year. And I'm after doing demos with all of my existing clients. And we also got contacted by CBRE in Perth and Brisbane. And I'm also speaking with property companies over in Melbourne as well. And so far, 100% of the feedback has been positive. Now, touch wood, I have to do a wider scope, obviously. But at the same time, no, it actually is really good. Like, I am the person who was managing the communities. So I know what you need to be successful on the management side for the person who's looking after the community and for the person who's on the user experience on the front end of the platform. So, and I looked at all the competition as well. And because the competition was either too expensive or didn't have all the functionality that we needed, is why I was like, well, we need to develop this because it makes sense. And it's what's needed to be the full picture to make everything run really smoothly. So I'm really delighted to say that we now finally have that sorted. And I'm kind of back to where I was originally in my head in 2019. It's just took a lot longer because of all the challenges that come with business that you don't know what you don't know yet. And then the pandemic wasn't ideal, even though slowing down wasn't the worst thing in a weird way.
You two are just amazing. Do you know what I could do? I could actually probably do a series of podcasts about the two of you. Like, two brilliant stories. And I didn't really know the backstory to either of you. It's just incredible.
Thank you very much.
Oh, no, I'm just going to go, whoa, what have we here? And I'm just looking at the clock there. I know we're going to run out of time. You better, what I want you to do is, what you've already done yourselves, please encourage young women into business, entrepreneurship. I keep telling people it's the only way to keep your head straight, because if you're working for the man or the woman, it's not a great place. Do it for yourself. Yeah. Still drive them nuts anyway, but, you know. Mm-hmm. So, sorry, let's start... maybe with you, Sinead, about the future.
Yep.
Like, you're in, we said, 800-odd pharmacies in Ireland. What about the overseas?
Yeah, so we just signed a deal in Northern Ireland yesterday. So
congratulations. All of this stuff is just... So that, in theoretically, is your first export. You know that?
Well, we exported to our first pharmacy chain in Scotland last month.
Okay.
So what we really would love to see is the product in a clinical setting. So this pharmacy chain in the UK, there's prescriber pharmacists, and they run clinics where they do chickenpox vaccines, throat swabs for a sore throat over there, and then the pharmacist can decide if you need an antibiotic or not. And they give regular hard candy pops to the children as a reward or as a bribe. And they immediately switched to ours when they saw honey, zinc, vitamin C, the child is engaged and it's fun. And so we would like to see more of the ton sticks in clinical settings. But in the meantime, we're going to just focus on Northern Ireland and then the wider UK from January.
And have you got your IP all sorted on that? You own everything? And
we do indeed.
Because that's the one I'm always worried about. You know, some smart ass comes along and just nicks it.
Well, potentially, you know, you can copy anything if you just tweak it slightly. But hopefully we have the first market advantage here, and we're going to build this as credible and essential.
You talk like a businesswoman.
Thank you.
She is a businesswoman.
You know, I still sometimes don't feel that. I'm still this lone parent just juggling. Yeah.
imposter syndrome. Everybody has it.
I feel like a tonsor.
Have you got other products? Maybe you don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to ruin your business before it takes off.
Me too.
But you have other products coming up.
We do. Something for the travel market next summer. Good. Another big problem for parents that we're going to try and address. And hopefully it'll be as well received.
Good woman. That's what I love. Do you know the way you're even saying encourage people to get into business? It's like there's a business in everybody.
Yeah.
It's everybody. How many people do you know, or even yourself, you're like, oh, that's a great idea if I could only do X, Y, Z. Like, we all have ideas. It's whether we're passionate enough about it or we choose to really focus on it, to take that plunge and go for it. Obviously, there's pros and cons of going into business. We're not going to sit here and be like, it's absolutely great. Like, when you tell your story and when you get the big wins, it's exciting. But, you know, there's a lot of roller coasters that come along the way. But I think when you actually go for it, working for yourself, like, I feel like I've been working for myself for such a long time now, I can't imagine working for somebody else. It's like you have the power to plan your own week, your own day. You do have some control of trying to make your future the way you want it to be. And then even, you know, set your own salaries. You don't have to ask anybody for permission to go on a holiday when you actually get to take one. I think anybody has the potential of setting up their own company.
Was there enterprise in either or both of your families? Anybody who, like, in the background doing things? Because they say that is a good sign of entrepreneurs.
My dad has his own, we have a family business.
Yeah.
So I've been answering the phone literally since I could talk, I'd say.
Very good at talking.
He's had his own business. My dad still does have his own business. It's a car dealership down in Galway, but I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere. Like, when we didn't have Google Maps,
he's going to thump the head off you.
It's okay, because he's flying it. He's got no issues. But that's what I think. Also, that's what gave me belief as well, because if you saw where we live in Ardrahan, when there wasn't Google Maps, I don't know how he sold a car. How could you find us? It's like, even when I was young, I used to have to give directions. I knew the directions off by heart to get to the house, because I don't know how people found us. But when you can see that he set up a car dealership from beside the house and grew it into, like, now I think they've got 200 cars, and it's a family business, and they're very successful. I'm delighted for them. But, you know, I kind of saw how to grow that and everything that comes with business.
Starts with the first car.
Honestly, he sold his first car when I was born. So I'm saying I was a lucky star, right? Because he was just fixing cars and had a garage before that, and then sold one car, then it became two cars, and now it's 200. So,
and the same question to you, Sinead, about any business in the background or?
So no is the answer. I'm the polar opposite end of your spectrum.
So, that's great in a way.
Yeah.
Because it proves anybody can do it.
Yeah,
what was your backstory?
So I'm the youngest of six from Northside Dublin, Finglas. Actually, when I got here today, I said I got lost and from the Northside. And someone said, oh, did you not get the memo? You're not allowed in. So in my family, there's quite a big age gap. My mum had me in her 40s. She thought it was menopause. It was like, no, it's your sixth child. So all my family went to school. And when I came up the ranks, I was doing my leaving cert. And I was like, what are you doing your leaving cert? You should be out working now. So I, you know, was blazing trails doing the leaving cert in my house, never mind anything else. So the answer is no, but it just doesn't matter.
100%.
It doesn't matter your personal situation, your circumstances, your finances. If you have something that you really care about, you just find a way.
Okay, another question, because as I say, I could spend probably all day talking to you, because it's when you're thinking along the lines of both of you are thinking, you come up with lots of other ideas as well.
True.
There's a fellow called John Teeling. I don't know whether you've ever heard of him. Teeling's Whiskey and Teeling's this, that and the other. I had him on the program, probably episode something like, it's a long time ago. He never stops thinking about big ideas.
Yeah.
Do you two think along ideas?
Yeah. Yep, all the time.
I have so many ideas.
So little time.
Yeah.
So a whole new mindset. When you run a business, you look at things as opportunities, which you wouldn't have before.
So, Sinead, you're obviously trying to get your ton sticks out to the world. Mm-hmm. The other ideas, and don't tell me what they are, because I don't want to nick them on you. But those ideas, what do you do with them? Just park them into an envelope somewhere?
Yeah. Because you wouldn't have time.
Yeah.
But they're brilliant.
But isn't that a pity, is that there are these great ideas. If only there was some way that you could actually open them up and do something with them.
Yeah. Especially in manufacturing.
But life is long. Life is long. Yeah. You know what I mean? I have all these ideas, but I feel like I'm going to get to, I plan to get to at least two more of them.
Property related or?
No.
That's really interesting.
No.
I have to kind of do a memo, the memory man, or try to read minds here.
Yeah, but I love coming up with ideas or anything that gets me excited. I write it down. I write everything down. But I have about five journals around the house, you know, not organized. But anytime I get an idea, I have to write it down, map it out, and then I park it. But I think that was one of the best things about doing the New Frontiers program at Enterprise Ireland, because I went in, even with the solution I have now, I had all these other ideas that I could do with this one solution that I still might work on, but it really got me to scale everything back, because I was probably talking about three different companies and I had a team of two. You know, it's like, what are you trying to do? So the biggest learning I've had from doing that process is, okay, you have to focus on something and get that done and get that 100% and scale everything back. But you can revisit them once you build out your team and then validate that market and continue. So one thing at a time.
And like Sinead, you raised your cash. That's a lot of cash to have raised. Yeah. You have raised nothing, have you?
No, I'm all self-funded. So as I said, I had clients before I had a business plan. So I obviously was able, and I put a good structure in place. So I was making money straight away.
Happy days.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Well,
and if you have CBRE, or do you have CBRE in Australia as a client, an actual client?
No, we're just chatting to them, but the chat went well. So, you know, I'm very optimistic. I now have big global ambitions.
You also know that means that you have to travel business class down to Australia.
I put it in my cash flow. It's all good. That's all good.
When you were on your world tour, did you go down to Australia?
Did you work in Australia? 3 months. No, I didn't work at all. I did great when
She's
I left.
Got a handy number, hasn't
she? Handy.
Nothing's handy. And if I learned anything from the event today, we actually don't give ourselves enough credit for all the hard work that we do. I did so much work to get into a nice position to be able to travel, and then I enjoyed myself 100%.
Absolutely. And dead right.
Yeah, no, I did a full world trip, but I was in Australia for 3 months. It's absolutely incredible.
Second final question, because if there is a final question, is when you speak of working hard, which of you works hardest? Who works hardest?
Out of the two of us?
Yeah. Both.
Obviously, both of us work extremely hard.
How hard is hard? How many hours? How many days?
Oh, geez.
You can't quantify it, because, you know, you're up in the morning, you might get up early, send a few emails off before the day starts. In my case, get the gang off, sort
well,
the
actually,
dog out.
To be fair, her yeah. life is harder. That's
no,
a fact.
No, it's just different,
different challenges. Of, yeah. But like, I honestly, having kids yeah. and managing everything, yeah. I
and a dog.
Full
a dog.
Respect.
Oh, he's my best.
Full respect.
I'd probably trade a child for the dog, but we won't go into that. No, my lot are older. My age range is 8 to 21. So the three eldest ones take care of themselves now, which is handy for me now. But I don't think... You know, it's a competition. Women are all hard working.
Yeah, they do. You can't put time on it because, you know, 1 week, it just changes all of the time, you know, and until you build out your team and everything, it's even great to get a weekend back. You know what I mean? So, and there's a lot of sacrifice that goes with setting up your company. It's like there's so much to do. You even trying to balance life and friendships and family and growing something and everything in between. So,
but both of you have a smile on your face.
Yeah, because it doesn't feel like work.
It's so fulfilling. It's like
you
so
are
satisfying.
Singing my song. I love this stuff. Come here to me. Final question is, hire in a heartbeat. You did get that email, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. Yeah. Who wants to answer?
It's a no-brainer for us.
Okay.
Amy Connolly.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. She has built some incredible brand. You know,
She's sat in the same chair as you.
She entered a crowded market space. She's carved out her identity here.
Yeah.
You know, I've bought her cosmetics just because someone said, oh, Amy Connolly, and it's not even, you know, she's amazing. She's opened a flagship store on Grafton Street and that was after the UK market and she had like X amount of profit, not just revenue, in a very short period of time and that takes a lot of work. So we are kind of wanting to mirror her journey.
Well, we'll give Amy a buzz for
Thank you.
Because we do know her. But you're not going to take Amy, are you?
Sorry? No.
Who are you going to go for?
I'm going to go with Anya Kerr. I actually met her this morning, so it was very inspirational to talk to her. And she is she's very successful and she's after developing her own technology company and she sold it to Spotify. So we're,
That's Kinzen. K-I-N-Z-E-N.
Yeah, you're all over it.
It's like he knows business or something.
Yeah, you seem to know what's going on.
But they only sold it last week.
It's unreal. Yeah. For an undisclosed amount, so you know it's good. But
she's brilliant, isn't she?
I'd listen to her all day.
But I suppose for me, having somebody with the experience, obviously a woman in business, she's done incredible for herself. And then also to be able to like scale and grow and sell in technology is something that I'd love to sit down and have coffee with her and even pick her brain, never mind if she joined my team.
Did you ask her?
Yeah, so we'll see how
And you are going to do it, I presume. She will do it for you?
Oh, yeah.
I don't see how anyone could say no to this one.
Did you ask Amy yet?
No, I haven't. I've never got to meet her in person. I'm a big fan of her.
Email. Her.
Of course. Like
she
do that LinkedIn,
is
sure.
fantastic.
Yeah. No, I've seen her at events. She's very
And she used to have the place down the road here in Dundrum. That is now shut. I just walked by the other day and she's now, as you say, on Grafton Street. And going for world domination.
Exactly. Good
love
for her.
Ambition. That is Sinead Crowther of Tonsticks and Lisa Gagan of Sunna Life. We never even got into Sunna Life because that, of course, means Sunna, happy life and all the rest.
We got it in the intro.
We kind of got it in the app as well. We touched on the app, but didn't really want to go into the technicals.
It's all good.
It's top secret. That's what it is. Okay. Ladies, what a pleasure. Sinead and Lisa, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And that is it from The Great Business Show, episode 109. You've probably already forgotten my earlier ask to press the share button on LinkedIn. Both of you have to press share. Don't just like. That means nothing. Do it now, please, or get the link and zap it to your pals on WhatsApp. Just think of all those women you know who need this episode's encouragement to set up their own business. You've just heard them. They love you for helping them. And a hello, advertising managers. Why are you not advertising with us? Big Red Cloud does, Microfinance Ireland, Virgin Media, and Udur Ostergötter to have. Our engagement levels are through the roof. Our audience of 74,000 just love That Great Business Show. And we record here at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where new sound engineer Lee Brennan is now an old hand. Later, Neil Oliver in post-production sound will add that extra sparkle that makes us sound like heaven on earth. And if you would like to record a podcast, contact the Dublin South Podcast Studios. It's where the Fifth Court, that's the new podcast we have, sits as well. And if you would like the media group to produce a podcast for you or your business or one on your own favorite topic, then do talk to me, Conal O'Moran. Find me on LinkedIn. And as always, our great business insight and tips are brought to you thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best all-natural shaving oil. They back us. Please back them. DeFactoShave.com. We'll get them. And the two ladies will be delighted to know that you're getting shaving oil from Tom Murphy as a special gift.
Thank you.
And do not forget to buy Business Plus magazine, where we now have a regular column all about the podcast. From me, Conal O'Moran, Mila Buechas, for listening. Agus slán, Tomáth.